Welcome to Naturally Nourished, a food is medicine podcast that delivers cutting-edge information and solutions for optimal health. Allie Miller is a nutrition expert sought out by the media and America's top medical institutes for her revolutionary functional medicine interventions. From disease treatment to prevention, every episode will empower you with ways to put yourself back in control of your health. Please note, the topics discussed are for educational purposes only and should not be used in place of any medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment from a licensed health professional. Now welcome your host, Allie Miller, integrative dietitian and owner of Naturally Nourished, and her vice president, integrative dietitian Carly Vogler.
Welcome to episode 20 of the Naturally Nourished podcast. I'm here with Carly.
Hey, everyone.
And today we are talking about infertility. This is a topic that I feel super passionate about now being in my third trimester of my first pregnancy, and especially having battled endometriosis. But we're going to get into my story next episode. Today, we want to talk about the struggles of infertility, the primary causes, and some of the solutions using food as medicine.
Yes, but before we get started, I want to get into a little bit of background on the rise in infertility that we've seen in the United States. And it has such a strong impact on families, which can be really, really emotional. And I don't think people really know how much of an impact it's making. So this year alone, there's been over 9 million Americans that will experience and have experienced infertility. It's a huge $3 billion with a B industry, which includes synthetic hormones, harmful interventions, and extended emotional timeframes for families, which probably is what they feel the most at the end of the day, is just that emotional struggle. So the expense and the stress of infertility, along with the side effects of treatments, are really driving health trends to discover natural alternatives. So Allie, tell everyone, what is your approach in treatment of infertility and what things do you start looking at?
So always with functional integrative medicine, we're looking at what is that root cause of the chronic condition. And so I've drawn out six basic elements that I like to tie in when I'm working with infertility with a patient. And the easy one is looking at insulin resistance. And we can classify that simply by looking at someone that's under or overweight. If they're underweight, I guess that's beyond insulin resistance. They might be malnourished, and so they're lacking micronutrients, especially a lot of the nutrients that play a role with healthy implantation and healthy fertilization within the body. And then overweight, especially the abdominal fat storage, that drives insulin resistance, and that is going to in itself create hormonal dysfunction. So over or underweight and then insulin resistance are all kind of the first thing I would look into. So we would look at a low glycemic diet. We would look at watching carb control. The basic principles would be starting with our optimal eating approaches, of course, and trying to achieve a healthy weight range.
And I think real quick to jump in, it's worth noting that you'll hear a lot of our medical interventions start with a clean diet, which is not to be underestimated at all.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's like you could save yourself a whole lot of money and just start by making sure you're doing all the right first things. Absolutely. The second thing to look a little deeper into is micronutrient deficiency. So we're going to tailor and focus on five specific micronutrients later in the podcast today. But micronutrients in general can play a big role with insufficient hormone response or hormonal dominance. So for instance, we can see zinc playing a role with excessive estrogen in the body and not seeing ample testosterone. We can also see with micronutrient deficiency cellular development issues and issues with DNA expression in general. The third thing that I would focus on is toxic overload or exposure to excessive toxins in the body. A lot of toxins are now classified as what are called endocrine disruptors. These are compounds, the word endocrine really means hormone. So an endocrinologist works with things like diabetes, the hormone within there would be insulin. An endocrinologist works with the thyroid hormones and then sexual hormones as well. So endocrine disruptors can play a big role with our metabolic organs and also our sexual organs, which can drive infertility. And we see it even in the farming communities with glycophosphate, which is a lot of the pesticide and chemical fertilizer residue, a higher propensity towards infertility issues.
And speaking of toxins, if you missed the two last episodes on the podcast, numbers 18 and 19, we kind of took Allie's detox program and broken into two parts to really yes. explain a medical intervention or a medically supported detox that you can follow. So there's a lot of information on that if you think maybe your source of infertility may be toxins.
And beyond that, if you want to just get jump started with one, under our books and programs tab, you will see a link to our 10-day Reset, Restore, Renew detox, real food detox. So that's also something that you can work as a foundational element before getting into advanced laboratory tests.
So, Ali, what other, I guess, sources of infertility would you look at other than we talked about micronutrient deficiency, toxins, and then weight?
Yes. So I would definitely target stress. And I think that this is one that's often overlooked. Unfortunately, it's one of those chicken and egg relationships because as you're coping with or dealing with infertility, you tend to get stressed more around your cycle time. You know, I know personally that that was something I'd always feel like in that pending time from ovulation to my cycle. Like, am I pregnant? I don't know. And stress hormones can actually create elevated levels of androgenic hormone expression and cortisol. And cortisol really drives inflammation in the body and can make an unhappy uterine environment. And so that can really play a role with a fertilized egg having a happy implantation or successful fertility. So stress is a huge piece of the puzzle. And then within that, kind of connected to stress, but on its own element, would be hormonal imbalance. So this is, for instance, things like PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, endometriosis, having estrogen dominance or low progesterone values. All of this is going to play a huge role with optimizing fertility or driving dysfunction or more difficulty with fertility in general. And then the last one that I would go into is dysbiosis or imbalanced gut bacteria. So often we would think of this more for like IBS or constipation or diarrhea, but it's important to acknowledge that the gut and the uterine area is very connected. So often we'll see females with recurring UTIs or yeast infections or bloating. And working with the dysbiosis or overgrowth of yeast in the body or overgrowth of bad bacteria or inadequate good bacteria can be a huge solution because that can regulate the inflammation. And also, if the microbiome or the gut biome is imbalanced, it can drive too much sterility in the body, which is not optimal for fertility.
So lots of different sources, possibly.
Yes.
It comes down to six that you mentioned: insulin resistance, micronutrients, toxicity, stress response, hormonal imbalance, and dysbiosis. I think some people are probably wondering, okay, well, if stress is my deal, how do I know if that's really what's going on? And some people also need to actually see lab results to be convinced that they're stressed.
This is true. Yeah, absolutely.
So what kind of things can people look into?
So we always want to start with a unique individualized approach. So when I'm working with a patient, I'm going to spend 75 to 90 minutes with them as an initial intake, asking them a whole gamut of questions. So I'm looking for physiological responses to stress. I'm looking for things like insomnia, clenching in the jaw, tension in the skeletal muscular system, constipation. All of these could be an element to tell me, okay, we need to look deeper into that HPA stress access. And that's something we also, you know, educated you guys on in the episode for HPA access and adrenal fatigue. So stress is a big piece. One way to start is through a stress assessment, which is a questionnaire. It's about 50 plus questions, and it's trying to look if you're overreactive or underreactive on that HPA axis. So are you stressed and wired, or are you stressed and tired? And we would address that individual in different ways. So it's either excessive cortisol output or inadequate cortisol output. And the same thing as far as neurotransmitters. Are they putting out too much adrenaline or not enough? So that would be one piece of the puzzle. Now, to dig deeper into that, we would run a neurohormone panel. The neurohormone panel is a great tangible data. As you mentioned, you know, it is nice to have evidence to really be doing a medical level intervention on the individual. And we do that. And in conjunction with that, we would also look at, if we were looking at, we have a panel called Neurohormone Complete Plus, and that would actually look at your estrogens and assess for estrogen dominance. It would look at progesterone. It would look at testosterone, cortisol, and then also those neurotransmitters. So that would be like a two-faceted approach of both the stress response as well as the hormonal imbalance. So that would be, honestly, for fertility, for most people, where I would start as far as the best bang for your buck on an advanced lab assessment. Then something else we could look into is doing a candida quiz. So there's also questionnaires we can complete with ourselves to see if we're dealing with candida or yeast overgrowth in the body. I'm super excited that we're going to be launching an ebook on candida in May. Is that right, Carly?
Hopefully.
Carly's working on it, so we'll see.
Hopefully May.
Always good to have goals. And so I'm hoping to launch that in May. And within that ebook will be the candida quiz. So that's one way that you can kind of start with a personal assessment. Taking that a step further, you know, you could look at like a stool assessment and things like that. And then for toxicity, we have a TEQ or a toxic exposure questionnaire. It's also a questionnaire that tells us about lead exposure, aluminum, some of the primary toxic elements in the body. Again, the organophosphates and the pesticides and things like that. And allows us as practitioners to provide specific lifestyle approaches to reduce toxicity. And then as Carly mentioned, you could also prophylactically partake in a quarterly detox to help your system to drive best hormonal expression. And we did mention a little bit in the detox podcast episode last that unfortunately, detoxing during pregnancy is like the worst thing you can do because you're passing off the abundance of the nutrients as well as the toxic compounds through that placenta. And it's actually really best to do prior to trying to get pregnant. So it's something that I would recommend as like a prophylactic preparation step for sure.
Absolutely. And if while you're listening, anyone's, you know, interested in any of these labs, we're very excited to launch. Well, it's the beginning of March now. Hopefully in the next couple weeks of 2016, we're going to be launching AllieMillerRD.com or relaunching it and making available a lot of these tests that we're talking about. So
yes.
Not only labs, but also interpretation and having actually a virtual practice where Allie can connect to you wherever you are and do sessions and really be able to dive into your story if any of this is catching, you know, your attention.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So beyond the advanced labs and assessments, there's definitely a diet approach that people can start working on even today. Allie, tell us more about that.
So immediately, we're looking to always reduce inflammation because an inflamed body is going to be puffy, rigid, is not going to be receptive to a newly fertilized egg. So we want to cool and soothe the body as best as possible. That's going to help with hormonal expression. That's going to help with reduction of stress in the body and the whole gamut, really. Reducing inflammation also helps with the insulin resistance. So that's the first place to start. So to practice an anti-inflammatory diet, the first foods I'm going to remove are going to be gluten, soy, refined sugar, corn, and then corn products. And I'm going to work with my patient to do a low glycemic diet that's focused on whole single ingredient foods. So that's going to be the kind of foundation. And some pieces of being able to do that with application, again, I mentioned we have the Optimal Eating virtual class. And then also our cookbook. I mean, just starting to follow our cookbook has done a world of wonders for a lot of patients that I've been working with infertility because it gives them that structure in that 12-week matrix of balanced breakfast, lunches, and dinners. We know all too often the standard American diet is way too high in refined carbohydrates. And even our quote-unquote healthy foods like our kashi cereal or our Special K with protein or whatever it is not even hitting the blip on the radar of what real health foods like eggs with their yolks, with their choline and their folate and all of their healthy fats and vitamin D and different micronutrients that really optimize the fertility cycles in the body.
So if you're one of those, just tell me what to do, people.
Yes.
Just eat out of the cookbook and you'll be
yes.
in a great path.
Go to the index and follow the 12-week matrix. You'll be in good shape. So another thing that I emphasize beyond the whole single ingredient foods is organic sourced ingredients. And this is because, as I mentioned, with the toxic residue, glycophosphate is a particular toxin that's found in pesticides and chemical fertilizers, and it has a strong correlation to infertility. In fact, we see populations in the agricultural communities because glycophosphate goes into their groundwater beyond just being as a toxic residue on the foods consumed, tends to be a significant rise as well as birth defects, unfortunately. So that's definitely something to prioritize, looking at that Beyond Dirty Dozen. There's now a list of 15 plus of the highest toxic fruits and vegetables, which are things that are going to have the thinnest skins, grow as roots in the ground, or retain a lot amount of water. those are the ones you definitely want to prioritize as organic.
So if you heard that story in the news a couple months back that organic is actually not healthier, then you can go ahead and ignore that.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I have to find that link in. I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many research studies shown on higher antioxidants, especially vitamin C. But we also see mineral variants. And then the big difference is what it's not laden with. And so remember, it's the double-edged sword every time we eat, not just what we're giving our body, but what we also are protecting our body from, to take into consideration.
Do you want to touch on really quickly our test that has to do with inflammation?
Sure. Yeah. So if, you know, you're eating clean, you're following a low glycemic, low carbohydrate diet and high antioxidant, high phytocompound and lean clean proteins and essential fatty acids, and you're still dealing with infertility, you may want to consider, well, first off, I would always ask for your C-reactive protein to be run. I can't tell you how many patients of mine are actually at infertility clinics and being treated and being put on medications, and a C-reactive protein has never been run. And a C-reactive protein is a marker of your systemic inflammation or the inflammation in your body. If your CRP is higher than 6, you're just not going to get pregnant. And so it's important to acknowledge that, you know, I mean, regardless of taking Clomid, regardless of being on in vitro and what have you, if you are in an inflamed state, your body is not going to be able to successfully carry a child. So we always look at, first off, is the body inflamed? And that's something you can do with your GP. If you find out that your CRP is elevated, then I would definitely recommend running the MRT test. This is the mediator release test. The mediator release test looks at 150 foods and chemicals specific to the surveillance system or immune system of your body and what inflammation is driven by what foods and chemicals you consume. So that's where someone's superfood becomes someone else's kryptonite. And that's when then it's not a one-size-fits-all optimal eating diet. So I've had people where they've had significant inflammation from things like apples or blueberries or salmon or chicken, olives, which is inclusive of olive oil. And these are things that they're eating every single day. So by following this strategic diet or this like GPS for their immune system, we're able to cool and soothe the inflammation. And that really helps their body to be more receptive to the fertility and healthy fetal development.
And you'll hear us talk about that test a lot. It's obviously fantastic for infertility, but we also look at it for people that have rheumatoid arthritis, colitis,
yeah.
Crohn's, a lot of digestive issues, anything to do with inflammation. It's a fantastic test.
And autoimmune in general, because, you know, we're wondering with autoimmune disease, why is the immune system attacking itself? So what is the inflammation drive from, and how can we approach that specifically and strategically with the diet?
So before we dive into some food as medicine support, I want to talk a little bit more about conventional treatments for infertility. Allie, let's start with Clomid and metformin. I want to hear what issues they cause and how you can take a different approach.
Sure. So both Clomid and metformin are typically going to be prescribed if the physician feels that you have an issue with ovulation. So Clomid is I call it like a slingshot effect on hormones. It's called a SERM, which is a selective estrogen receptor modulator. And what it basically does is it inhibits the estrogen receptors in your HPA axis. So your hypothalamus, again, in the brain, and pituitary in the brain, and the adrenals above the kidneys. These play a huge role on your stress influence. So the Clomid is going to inhibit the estrogen receptors in your hypothalamus, and it also blocks the negative feedback of estrogen on your gonadotropin release. And so your body kind of reduces estrogen and then slingshots or gives an excess estrogen push. This drives an upregulation of your HPA G axis, which includes, you know, the gonads or ovaries, and is gonna be, I think the best scenario is like a slingshot. So it's like this hold back and then this release. So it blocks the receptors, tricks the body's feedback, and then gives you this surge. And the idea is that the surge in the estrogen is supposed to give you a successful ovulation.
Okay. This is new to me too. I like hearing this.
Yeah, so it's really interesting though. I mean, like, that's like the go-to medication. And what's wildly interesting to me is that I've had women that are estrogen dominant be put on Clomid just like because it's the physician's number one choice. It's just like, you're infertile. Here's your Clomid.
Okay.
And it doesn't make sense if someone has estrogen dominance to give them a SERM.
So it's mimicking that when you cycle, you have that drop in hormones and it's trying to mimic that severe drop.
Right.
I guess is what you're saying.
But the slingshot part can be too excessive and then that can drive infertility within itself. So, you know, it's
not looking at the root cause, what we always
right,
talk about.
Right. So it's giving that chance. But it's definitely not going to be an optimal selection of medication, especially if the patient has hormonal imbalance of dominance in estrogen.
And metformin is, we always hear in relation to PCOS or polycystic ovary syndrome. What's the mechanism with that medication and the issues that it causes?
So, yeah, I mean, I think of metformin primarily as a diabetic drug. I mean, that's the biggest population. Endocrinologists just started giving it to PCOS patients, I think, in this last 5 to 10 years. I think it's been on the market for about 15 or so. It was marketed initially as a type 2 diabetes drug because it specifically helps with the insulin resistance. So in helping with the insulin resistance, it's helping with regulating the glycemic influence. If we regulate those blood sugar levels in the body, we can also help to treat the PCOS. Because within insulin resistance, we typically see too high of testosterone, and then that testosterone to estrogen relationship is off. So a lot of people with PCOS will have like hirsutism or like hair growth or other androgenic symptoms. So the metformin helps to regulate both the insulin response and the testosterone estrogen response. But the concern with metformin is that it can drive mitochondrial dysfunction, and your mitochondria is the energy factory of every cell in your body. And when you're trying to grow a healthy baby, the cellular production rate is so accelerated. I mean, I don't know the statistic, but it's like thousands of cells per minute or day, or I don't know. It's a lot, all I know. All I know is that, you know, baby starts as the size of a poppy seed. So it's pretty remarkable, the rate of growth. And to me, I think there's a pretty wide concern about driving mitochondrial dysfunction, since that's the driver of metabolic function in the energy factory of every cell in your body. Also, we see metformin driving B12 deficiency. We know that B12 is so correlated with all of the B vitamins to play such a healthy role in the neural tube defects, as well as neuropathy in the individuals that are carrying, and can play a big role in, again, just overall healthy fetal development and successful maintenance of pregnancy, so carrying it to full term.
And Allie, beyond ovulation issues, what about issues like endometriosis or history of miscarriage?
So when we're talking about, I guess let's start with endometriosis first. And endometriosis is actually, we're going to go into that a lot into next episode, I'm thinking, so I'm going to hold back on the detailed description. But the primary thing with endometriosis is that your cells of your endometrium grow outside of the uterus. And so there can be a lot of aggregation, tissue hardening, scarring, and that in itself can play a role with making an unhappy uterine environment. So that can drive infertility. Also, the scarring can occur in the fallopian tube. So that can play a role with egg release. And the primary procedure for that is going to be an ablation, where they actually remove the lining of your endometrial tissue, or a laparoscopic procedure to do the same principle. The issue or concern is that an ablation, if done too aggressively, can drive infertility. So it's one of those chicken and eggs. The unfortunate issue is that the solution, one of the primary solutions to endometriosis is having a baby, because having a baby surges the lining of your endometrium. So it's one of those chicken and egg things again on the reverse, where, well, if you can't get pregnant because of the scarring, you may want to actually go forward with something like an ablation or a laparoscopic removal. Now, prior to that, though, you can work with hormones. Often with endometriosis, there is estrogen dominance. So you might be seeing some successful outcomes by doing an estrogen detox or working with some bioidentical progesterone and correcting your hormones. And then, be that it's an inflammatory issue, you might work with some proteolytic enzymes to help to reduce the aggregation of the tissue or the scarring. I have a lot of women dealing with infertility on systemic enzyme complexes, because basically, again, it reduces the inflammation specifically in the uterus, and that makes the uterine area more inviting. And as far as history of miscarriage, you know, that I would really look into things like micronutrient deficiency. I would look into things like MTHFR, genetic variants, people that are homozygous MTHFR have high risk for miscarriage. And then the other thing with miscarriage is looking into immune function and autoimmune disease. If you have a high amount of natural killer cells, your immune system is overreactive. Or if you have a positive ANA scoring, you have DNA spilling into your bloodstream, your immune system is attacking itself. And on those cases, sometimes the immune system targets and attacks the developing child. And that can drive the miscarriage, as you know, beyond the micronutrient and the genetic MTHFR. Could be autoimmune elements to look into.
We'll probably have to do an episode all on its own for MTHFR and methylation.
I think so. We should add that to the list for sure. And I guess real quick, so I talked about the things that you can do with conventional medicine with endometriosis and then the alternatives with the miscarriages. The things that they typically are going to do is give you steroids and steroids as well as synthetic addressment of imbalance. And so I'm not really a big proponent of steroids in general because they can drive mood imbalance. They can also mimic an influence of inflammation in the body or suppress inflammation that's needed to heal the body. And steroids can also work against the adrenals and throw off that entire HPA cortisol axis. So that would be kind of a last line of defense. And I think there's a lot more natural interventions you can first do, especially if it is autoimmune. You could go back to that. Let's manage the inflammation. Let's look at the MRT test and let's help that body's immune system to mellow out.
It's just so crazy to me. We always talk about silencing the symptoms with medications and how we like to approach it a different way. But the body is trying to tell us something, and these medications don't try. It's not that they're honing in on what the imbalance is and then using a medication to fix an imbalance. They're just using it blindly often, and they're just not really fixing the true root cause.
Right. And some work, you know, but because they're giving these synthetic surges in abundance, and then it can throw the body out of whack even further.
Right. So we've talked about what to look further into, some of the top causes of infertility, the foundation of how to eat, which is so important. So let's now give listeners some tangible nutrients to optimize fertility.
Okay, so let's start with folate. So I think that folate is the big one that most people know about. You know, when you're talking about a prenatal vitamin, you think about folic acid and folate in general. And that's because of the studies that we've seen with, again, neural tube defects. So this is ensuring that we get healthy brain function and healthy spinal function and that the neural tube is completed in its production. Folate will be found in avocado, leafy greens, also going to be found in proteins, but we typically think of foliage, like leafy green materials. It is an essential B vitamin, and it plays a big role in our DNA and RNA, so our actual production of our cellular expression of our genes. It also, as I mentioned, plays a big role with the brain development, and then plays a big role we're seeing with preventing miscarriage. I referenced that MTHFR, and that stands for methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase. It's a genetic SNP or a genetic mutation that highly drives miscarriage, as well as a gamut of conditions like Parkinson's disease, ADHD, insomnia, anxiety. There's a whole thing. Again, I agree, Carly, we have to do an episode on methylation.
Yes.
But long story short, folate can help your body, if in the right form, and we'll talk about that in supplements, but folate can help your body to methylate, which is going to help in all of those ways.
So what are the best food sources? You mentioned leafy greens and avocado.
Yeah. So those would be the primary ones. Like I said, like foliage, and then, you know, meats have some, but the best would be your avocado and your leafy greens for sure.
Okay. And we'll give you a recipe at the end that'll hopefully put these all together.
Yes.
The next one is B vitamins. Let's talk a little bit about how those are influential.
Yeah. So B vitamins often get depleted actually with use of birth control. So it's important to think of that. So if you're looking for fertility in your next 2 to 3 years, I recommend getting off of synthetic birth control to help your body to find its natural hormonal rhythm and also start to replete the micronutrient deficiencies that are caused by the synthetic hormones. So it's important to recognize that synthetic estrogen in the birth control drives down your B vitamins. Your B vitamins are going to play a big role in helping with healthy estrogen metabolism. They also help with your cellular health, energy metabolism, and then supporting a healthy weight by helping with that energy metabolism, which is going to help in turn with the insulin response. So it's going to reduce that insulin resistance, which we know can drive off the hormones. Beyond the synthetic estrogen, a refined carbohydrate diet, especially refined grains in the form of flour-rich foods, are going to deplete and leach B vitamins from your system. So it's important to avoid those types of foods as well, as we mentioned generally. And then B vitamin-rich foods are going to be seen in nuts and seeds as primary sources. That would also include nut butters, using nut flours, and then liver. Liver is a good friend for the B vitamins. It also rich, again, like I said, organs and meats are going to be the folate as well. So folate is a form of a B vitamin. So first highlighted specifically the folate, and now B vitamins is an entire family.
Okay. And the third one is going to be EPA DHA, so your omega family, which is so important for inflammation, which we talked about as well.
Yes. So omega-3s are going to be your primary anti-inflammatory fats. These are going to make the uterus a more welcoming environment and also help with hormonal expression. So the hormones that are circulating through your body have a better chance at being utilized. Things that are going to be best sources here are going to be your egg yolks from pasture-raised eggs, quality source of fish oil, wild-caught fish in general. I like to recommend skipjack, which is a light tuna. It's lower in mercury than the tuna, the larger fish itself. And then wild salmon also is going to be, of course, a great option there. And then flax seeds and chia seeds are going to have some omega-3s. It's important to acknowledge that the flax seeds and chia seeds have to be converted. It's many steps through the liver and kidneys through a process called elongase and desaturase, and that's to make that omega-3 baseline into the active EPA and DHA. So you're going to get the most viable source from the animal sources, but flax seeds also have a unique element called lignans, and lignans are a unique fiber that helps to trap or sequester excess estrogen. So if you have estrogen dominance, it may be beneficial to still use those flax seeds, and that's something I incorporate in my fertility boosting smoothie.
Okay, and if you're wondering about supplements, we're going to get to that in a second, so yes. Hold that thought.
Okay.
The next one is zinc.
So zinc is a mineral of focus for fertility because it plays a big role with PCOS. Zinc can help with insulin levels that are elevated. It can also help with testosterone expression, so it actually aids in the aromatization process. It blocks the aromatization of testosterone into estrogen and allows estrogen levels to maintain and testosterone levels to be at a moderate level. It also plays a role with fat metabolism and vitamin A status. Vitamin A is one that we hear to be controversial for pregnancy because vitamin A in the retinoic form can be a toxin for fetal development. However, too low of vitamin A can drive low antioxidant status and drive inflammation. So that can drive infertility and birth defects as well. So it's important to make sure that you're at a healthy vitamin A status. And the safest way typically is through like beta carotene rich foods. But we are seeing now new research, which is really exciting, that's allowing pregnant women to eat like liver and vitamin A rich foods as well. If they're in their whole food form, there's no research that's shown toxicity. It's more in the synthetic forms of the vitamin A that was a high risk from fortified foods.
I bet we're going to see more and more of this. I think it always comes down to eating a whole food, right?
Yes.
People have been having children forever.
Right.
So absolutely, they've probably been eating organ meats at some point.
There's indigenous populations that, right, eat thymus, liver, kidney, all of that, and have beautiful, successful, healthy babies. So not as concerned as, you know, the general American public would be about the vitamin A toxicity.
Right.
But zinc does help with vitamin A, and then it does help, of course, again, with the PCOS, insulin resistance, and testosterone. Foods for zinc are going to be red meat, your pumpkin seeds, and cacao. So the raw cocoa powder is also going to be a rich source there.
I'm sure people won't be upset to hear that chocolate's on their diet.
Yeah, prescription for chocolate. Absolutely.
And the last one is my favorite, maca root.
Yes. So I think everyone needs a stress supporter. So, you know, I guess we kind of cheated saying five micronutrients, but, you know, this counts within there. This is a stress supporting compound, and maca is a root from Peru. And the root has been long sold as a boost for libido. It actually stimulates the pituitary gland, which plays a role in that stress access, and is an adaptogen. So it helps to reduce our stress response. But by stimulating the pituitary, it stimulates our human growth hormone, our oxytocin, which is our pleasure center in the body, and our progesterone production. And often, stressed out females run low on their progesterone. So the progesterone is going to help with healthy implantation of the fertilized egg. It's going to support the placenta for production to prevent miscarriage. We often see low progesterone status as one of the number one causes of early miscarriage. And then again, with that oxytocin, it helps with libido. So that can make the fertility process a lot more fun and a lot less work. Because when you're dealing with infertility, sometimes things can get a little mechanical. So good to have a little maca to spice things up.
Absolutely. And this is just a powder that you can find to throw in smoothies. I don't mind it so much. Some people say it has a little bit of a metallic taste, but you can also take it in the supplemental form.
Right,
if you don't like it.
For sure.
So I'm sure everyone's probably overwhelmed with all the content. This has been a super helpful episode so far, I think. A lot of it is new for me. But let's just give some listeners a couple more clinical pearls in terms of specifics and supplements.
Okay, yeah. I'd hate to take you guys this far and not give you some additional turnkey solutions. So I want to just highlight a couple products that I think, bar none, even without testing, you should be on if you're dealing with infertility or even if you're trying to get your body ready for optimal fertility. The first would be a quality prenatal. That goes without saying. And research really supports that you should be on a quality prenatal at least a year prior to aiming for conception. Because this is getting your body's hormones in an optimal state. It's nourishing the particular organs of the body, like the ovaries and the uterus and the areas of function. And it's going to optimize the healthiest fetal development possible. Things that I look for in a quality prenatal is a product that's free of dyes, free of fillers, and then is third-party assessed for its purity. So I want to see that it is actually going to be standing by the particular amounts of milligrams on the label. And a third party, a party that does not gain monetary interest, is going to stand for that. I also recommend ensuring that your multi has methylated B vitamins. So this is really important, again, because 40% of our population has that MTHFR genetic mutation, and they're not able to use synthetic folate. So a methylated form of folic acid will be called 5-methyltetrahydrofolate, or it might have the number 5 with a hyphen and then the MTHF. This is also known as nature folate in some lines. And then B12, instead of being cyanocobalamin, which is the synthetic, it's going to be listed as methylcobalamin. Now, just like you might hear with buying quality foods, if it just says B12, if it says folic acid is always synthetic. So it has to say folate or that 5-MTHF. If it just says B12 and it doesn't distinguish, it's going to be cyanocobalamin, because it's just like if something's organic, they're going to put that on the label because they went through the investment of the time and energy to do the work. So you want to make sure that you look for a product that names that methylcobalamin for the B12 as well.
And this is the same for everyone's regular multivitamin. I mean, yeah. Bust out your multivitamins and look to see what it says.
Absolutely. Another thing particular for, and this is a good thing for all multis, but for a prenatal as well, as choline. Choline really works the liver. It's kind of a derivative of the B family, the B vitamin family. It plays a big role with fetal brain development and optimizing fertility, and it does stimulate the liver function, so it can help the body with managing the toxic overload. So on our blog, actually, I don't know, I'll go to the next one, Carly. You want to look up the, it's called Resolving Infertility Naturally. I had a window open. So if you search on our blog, infertility, it should most definitely come up. But we have a really cool picture on there about infertility and micronutrient deficiencies. It's this really cool web. And then on there, we've actually, for your convenience, listed links to the particular products that I found on the market that are available that meet all of my requirements for sound options for you to take. So the quality prenatal that I like is on there. The next thing I would start with is a quality fish oil. So even if you're eating fish twice a week, which is recommended, and getting those flax seeds in, still many Americans are going to have an off omega-3 to 6 ratio. And so we really want to find balance by bumping up those omega-3 fatty acids. Also, these are going to drive anti-inflammatory influence in the body, which are going to allow the body successful fertilization and implantation. You want to look for a product that's third-party assessed for PCBs, mercury, toxic byproducts, and purity. And I would go for at least a full gram of combined EPA DHA. I can't tell you all too often how many patients are taking a wild salmon oil or a cod liver oil or a Kirkland's Best fish oil or whatever the product is. And when I look at the actual potency of their formula, first off, I'm not sure about the purity. But secondarily, they have to take 6 to 8 to 10 capsules to have an effective dosage. So you want to actually look of the EPA and DHA, those milligrams should add up to a minimum of a gram. And then any patient that has inflammatory markers or an inflammatory condition is going to require a higher dosage, like 2 grams or more. But it's important to note that blood thins with high omega-3 fatty acids. So if you are taking 2 grams or higher, you definitely want to reduce those about at least 10 days, if not 4 weeks prior to your due date, because that'll help to avoid a hemorrhage or bleeding out or thinning your blood during the delivery process.
And Allie's been referring to a couple times having a third party assessed supplement. And that's because they have actually found in certain over-the-counter supplements in Walgreens or CVS or just your local pharmacy, a vegetable oil in the fish oil capsule.
Yeah.
Which is just the opposite of anti-inflammatory.
Right. Soybean oil or cottonseed oil. And what's so wild is those are omega-6s. So you're actually giving your body the opposite effect of what you want to do. You're actually driving inflammation. So it's pretty scary. Definitely something we don't want to be doing.
No, be very careful about the companies that you're buying your supplements from.
Yes. Maca is the last one. I think we hit pretty much what that is, what it does, but I do have a link to maca on the blog. Again, Carly said it does have a unique flavor profile, and if you're not someone that's doing smoothies daily, you might not find as easy of a delivery for it, especially if you are a high-stress individual, low libido, or think that you're prone towards low progesterone. This is the first line of defense that you can do that I feel is a first do no harm mantra without having your progesterone levels tested. And then as far as the most important element for fertility, I really feel is a bioidentical progesterone. However, this is something that needs to be prescribed via consultation and lab results. It's not something that you can just do as a shot in the dark.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I think this is a lot of content, but so helpful, Allie. Thank you. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there just have been looking for this kind of information, someone taking a natural approach. So hopefully this is resonating with people and helping them to have babies, if not now,
yes,
then in the future.
More beautiful babies.
If you're interested in any of the things we were talking about, again, AllieMillerRD.com is going to have a treatments tab. You can look further into your fertility with a virtual session with Allie, some lab testing, and absolutely always be checking our blog for updates. But there's a lot of fertility information and recipes on there, like the Choco, what does that say?
Chococado.
Yeah, Chococado. Every time I say it, I'm like, in
Chococado.
My head.
Yeah, it's a chocolate avocado smoothie. So that's in that blog that's called Resolving Infertility. If you search Chococado, I dare you to try to spell it. But if you want to search that, it should be under there too. But it incorporates all of the nutrients that I highlighted, including some of that maca powder and the nuts and seeds, avocado, cacao, flaxseed, and a really nourishing option to boost your fertility with food as medicine.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Naturally Nourished Podcast. Visit our blog at AllieMillerRD.com for recipes, wellness tips, and food as medicine meal plans. Connect with Allie and Carly at AllieMillerRD on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Until next time, stay nourished and be well.